a little bit about us for those of you who this is are with us for the first time. Southern Alliance for Clean Energy has been a leading voice in energy reform to protect the quality of life of treasure places in the Southeast for the past 25 years. We are celebrating our 25th anniversary this year, and we encourage you to participate through signing up for action alerts or becoming a member of our organization. The presentation will run for 1 hour, at which point we will open it up for questions. And I will now turn the presentation over to Sam. Sam, are you there?
I am here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Courtney. Hey, you can go on to the next slide. There we go. Well, we'll just jump right in. Just a quick little outline of today's webinar. We're going to go over what is integrated resource planning in general very quickly, using the TVA process as a bit of a case study so that you can sort of see how it evolves into what it does. Then we'll look at sort of how TVA is evaluating the results of their integrated resource planning process. We'll go over briefly what the draft results of TVA's process are to date. Unfortunately, the webinar does not provide the time limit, the amount of time that it would really take to dig into the results, but I'm happy to follow up with people afterwards if we want to dig into that a bit further. And then we'll go over SACE's perspective on a few what we think are key issues with the IRP results, draft results. And then finally, we'll just go over briefly how you can make a difference by submitting comments and letting TVA know your thoughts on where our energy future should go. Next slide, please. So real briefly, why we're here. We're here because in June of 2009, TVA announced an IRP process to determine a preferred strategy for meeting future energy demand through 2029. SACE had been advocating pretty hard for several years for TVA to pick up the integrated resource planning process. Their last IRP process was conducted in 1995, and we felt very strongly that given all the regulatory and technological changes that had occurred in the utility industry over the 15 years, that it was well overdue that they should renew this process. So we're very pleased to see them announce that in June of last year. Another thing that accompanies the IRP process is what TVA is calling a stakeholder review group. It's a group made up of, I believe, 15 stakeholders ranging from state representatives to industrial and commercial representatives. UT is represented there. That's University of Tennessee. ORNL is represented there. Environmental groups, including SACE and the Sierra Club, are represented there. So it's a pretty broad range of stakeholders. Our executive director, Stephen Smith, is a member of that stakeholder review group. And for about 15 months, we went through the IRP process sort of hand-in-hand with TVA. We met about monthly to get updates and provide feedback and so forth. And then on September 16th of this year, TVA released the draft IRP for public review and comment. That comment period runs through November 8th. And then TVA will take those comments, do some further analysis, in part based on those comments, and we'll present the final plan to the TVA Board of Directors in the spring of 2011. Hopefully that plan, it is anticipated that that plan will present a preferred strategy to meet future energy demand for TVA, and then the board will take that, and that should guide the board's decision-making over the next several years until we undertake this process again. Next slide, please. Oh, wrong way. There we go. So what is integrated resource planning? And this slide sort of gives you the Webster's Dictionary definition of integrated resource planning. In sum, it's a modeling process that is used by utilities across the nation to determine the best possible mix of both supply and demand side resources to meet future energy demand within the utility's operating constraints. And then two of the key factors for figuring out what the best mix of resources are the cost and the risk. So we're looking for the least cost and the least risk strategy for meeting future energy demand. And we'll go over and sort of break down the various parts of this definition as we go through the webinar. Next slide, please. One question that we want to make clear, and that TVA has actually done a very good job of also making clear, is does the IRP process seek to predict the future? And the answer to that is a clear no. The IRP process actually seeks to figure out which combination of resources will best prepare the utility for a range of possible futures. So we, TVA looks out and says, what might happen in the future, and how do we best position ourselves now to be prepared for this wide range of possibilities? There are two overarching considerations to sort of figuring this out. One is, what might future energy demand look like? In other words, what might the future hold? And second, what are the resource options that the utility has to pick and choose from to meet future energy demand? And basically, both of these considerations are impacted by literally an infinite number of uncertainties, from something very direct, such as whether the economy recovers or not, to something very obscure, you know, going all the way back to a butterfly flaps its wings in India type of analysis. And really, one of the keys to successful planning is narrowing these uncertainties down into a manageable number that also reflects the most likely range of possible future conditions. That's really one of the keys and one of the things that TVA and the stakeholder group worked on for several months. Next slide, please. So this is the first of probably several busy slides, and I certainly don't expect people on the line to memorize all that's here, but basically I want to give you a sense of how the uncertainties get pared down. So on the left column there, you'll see basically an initial list of uncertainties that were identified by TVA staff. And actually this list has been pared down from a much larger list. And then, as you can see, following the arrow to the right, they've taken that list, and then the final product is a list of 10 key uncertainties that TVA believes are the key drivers to what will happen with energy demand and what will happen with our TVA's ability to meet future energy demand over the next 20 years. So you'll see things on there like whether or not there are greenhouse gas reduction requirements, or what environmental regulatory atmosphere may look like, what the price of commodities are, what interest rates may do, and then what utilities do is they take these uncertainties and they sort of bound them with a high and a low estimate. So for instance, for interest rates, you know, a utility might want to model well, interest rates may, you know, reasonably go as low as maybe 3% and may go as high as, you know, 8 or 9%, and they'll model within that range. Now, interest rates may go as high as 20%, and that's where some of the risk analysis comes in, so that you're prepared for some of these unforeseen circumstances or as well positioned as you can be. But really what we're modeling is what is a reasonable range for all of these uncertainties. Next slide, please. There we go. So basically what happens is we have all of these uncertainties, and you add these high and low sort of values to them. And how TVA did this, TVA did a scenario analysis where they created seven different possible future scenarios that they thought could reasonably occur over the next 20 years. So again, you don't need to understand this entire chart here. Just understand that on the left column there are the same uncertainties that we saw on the previous slide. And then for each one of the scenarios, as you see across the top row there, there are different values for each of the uncertainties plugged in. So these scenarios will represent the entire range from low to high of what TVA believes or what a utility believes is reasonable to expect. So for instance, the red arrow there points to the total load uncertainty, and you can see if you were to look at each cell across that row, you would see that TVA is really modeling or really believes that the range of load growth that might occur over the next 20 years is from about 0% a year of a prolonged economic downturn to 5 to 6% a year, which is scenario number one there, the second column from the left. The economy recovers dramatically. So that's sort of what is plugged into the model to tell the model what might the future look like what might our load look like, what might the conditions that we're operating under look like, so that the model can then begin to figure out how best to fill in resources and so forth. Next slide, please. So I highlighted, or I put an arrow on that total load row on the previous slide, because it sort of leads into this slide here. Obviously, load growth is one of the key factors to determining TVA's future, because it determines exactly what resources TVA will need to make sure that the Valley's energy demand or electricity demand is met. So this graph shows you those seven scenarios that were on the previous slide, and basically just pulls out that load growth part of it and shows you what the load growth looks like for each one of those scenarios. And then that flat line along the bottom, that's TVA's current generation resources. So they have about 34,000 megawatts of generating resources currently available to them, and then filling the gap between that flat line and those growing curves is really what the IRP process is all about. So you can see the model is looking at several different growth curves, several different amounts of generation resources that are going to be needed to meet future energy demand. Next slide, please. So now a utility needs to tell the model, well, we have a sense of what we might need over the future. What are our resources available to us to meet that gap, to fill in those resources? And this just sort of shows you all the resources that TVA is considering as available to it for future generation, for meeting future generation growth. And it gives you a little bit of a sense of some of the parameters that they put on these resources. So you want to tell the resources, we have, you know, these resources available to add to our generation over the next 20 years, and then you need to tell the model what are the characteristics of these resources, characteristics such as cost, reliability, the ability to start up quickly, or do you have to sort of turn it on and keep it running? And you can see that along the left column there, they have a couple characteristics, baseload, intermediate, non-peaking, and non-dispatchable. And that sort of tells you where on the scale the resource is in terms of how TVA will use it to meet load. So baseload, you basically turn the switch on, you leave it on, and you run it basically as much as you possibly can. Intermittent resources typically come on as load begins to build during the day. Peaking resources come on during those few hours during the day when you really hit your peak and everything is sort of running. And then the non-dispatchable resources are resources like wind or solar, where you don't have a lot of control over when the energy comes, and you need to design your generation portfolio such that it takes into account that you're going to be getting solar during the day, you're going to be getting wind when the wind is blowing, and so forth. So there's a whole host of characteristics that are plugged into the model so that the model understands how these resources can be used as we look over the next 20 years. Next slide, please. So now that the model understands, well, I have a sense, the model has a sense of what the future might hold. The model has a sense of what are our resources to help meet future energy demand. Now a utility will start to input into the model what are called inputs and constraints. And basically, this is guiding the model's decision-making to some degree. So inputs and constraints into the model's resource selection process allows the utility to impose certain priorities or limitations on the model's ability to select a particular resource. Inputs are akin to the utility making a decision for the model. So for instance, as you'll see later on, energy efficiency, the amount of energy efficiency that TVA may go after is an input into the model. It is telling the model, we're going to get this much energy efficiency, and that you should design your resource portfolio around this input. Constraints are kind of the opposite of that. They're limits on the model's ability to choose certain resources. So, for instance, it may take 8 to 10 years to build a nuclear power plant. You need to tell the model that we can't have a nuclear power plant online, a brand new nuclear power plant online by, say, 2012. So, you know, it needs to understand what are the constraints on some of these resources and our ability to bring them online, or TVA's ability to bring them online. And basically what TVA has done is they have taken different combinations of inputs and constraints and used them to create what they're calling strategies for meeting future energy demand. Next slide, please. I believe that's other, the wrong way. There we go. So this is a summary of TVA strategies. And a traditional utility, honestly, often doesn't go to this layer of depth. What they'll do is they'll take the inputs and constraints, and then they'll just sort of let the model do its thing. But because TVA has sort of different concerns, different priorities than your traditional utility due to their status as a federal agency and their statutory directives, they chose to go forward and take these constraints and inputs and sort of force them into a series of different strategies, five different strategies, potential strategies, for how they might go about meeting future energy demand. So if you look on the left-hand column, you'll see 9 different attributes. And the top 4 rows in yellow are model inputs, and the bottom 5 rows in white are model constraints. And then as you go across from left to right, across the various strategies, you'll see different levels of these inputs and constraints. So for instance, just taking the top row, energy efficiency and demand response, as you go across, you'll see the level of energy efficiency or demand response that TVA is going to go out and hopefully procure to help meet future energy demand grows over the course, over those 5 different strategies. You'll see, for instance, under nuclear, there's different characteristics. So strategy A, where is a strategy where TVA would actually buy all of their future generation needs, additional generation needs off the open markets, and that would not add to their generation portfolio. So there you see under nuclear, they've told the model that we wouldn't be adding any more nuclear plants beyond Watts Bar Unit 2, which is about complete, should come online around 2012. So it's already considered pretty much a done deal. So as you go across, you'll see different characteristics for these inputs and constraints. And TVA is really testing, well, what happens if we don't add any nuclear power? What happens if we get less energy efficiency as opposed to more? What happens if we retire this much coal as opposed to, 3,000 megawatts or 5,000 megawatts of coal? And looking to see what happens to the cost and the risk and other metrics that we'll get into later when you tweak the sort of conditions that the model is operating under. Next slide, please. So once a utility has told the model, here's what the future may look like, here are the resources and the characteristics of the resources that we have at our disposal, and here are some of the inputs and constraints that we need to operate under, then the model does its thing and basically comes out with a resource portfolio to meet future energy demand. So TVA's models came out with what you're seeing in front of you, basically came out with one of those for every different strategy that we saw in the previous slide. So this is the unit addition schedule for planning strategy C, which is the diversity-focused planning strategy. And on the left column, you'll see the year, and then you'll see the next 3 columns are the defined model inputs. So that's what TVA has told the model we are going to do, and you should work around these. So you'll see energy efficiency, demand response, renewables, and fossil generation layups there. That's what TVA has told the model. And then what you see in the rest of the chart there, the blue labeled columns, are basically what the model believes is the best plan forward under each one of those future scenarios. You'll remember previously, several slides back, we talked about how TVA had created a suite of future scenarios, 7 of them, that sort of indicated a what we could reasonably expect from the future and the differences in those different future scenarios. So, for instance, just taking that first blue column, SC1, that's scenario 1, which is characterized by a very high load growth, you'll see that the model has chosen to add generation almost every year as you go down through 2029. And each one of those, so CC stands for a combustion turbine, a gas turbine combined cycle. CT stands for a combustion turbine non-combined cycle. BLN stands for Bellefonte Nuclear Unit 1, Bellefonte Nuclear Unit 2, and so forth down the line, so you can see all the resources that the model believes are going to be necessary to meet future energy demand, and that the model believes are your best choices for meeting future energy demand as we go through 2029. Next slide, please. So once you get all this from the model, now the utility or TVA needs to sort of say, well, we have all these different suggested resource plans and resource additions over the next 20 years. How do we evaluate them and sort of figure out what is the best path forward for us, what we should be planning for right now to sort of minimize our exposure to cost and risk over the next 20 years? And cost and risk are really the primary drivers for deciding what the resource portfolio should look like. And utilities outside of the TVA region often really base their decisions almost solely on cost and risk. However, because TVA is a federal agency, they have certain statutory directives that force TVA to take into account other considerations. So TVA has statutory directives to be a steward of the environment, to support economic development, and to support technological innovation. So TVA is looking at these model outputs at the different resource portfolios and saying, how do they help us achieve our statutory directives of environment and economic development and technological innovation, and at the same time being very aware of cost and risk. Because cost and risk, I will reiterate, are really the primary drivers, and then you want to then find something that is low cost, low risk, that also allows TVA to achieve its other statutory directives. Next slide, please. So taking all that into account, what TVA is producing and what you'll see in the draft IRP, if you go online, download it, and so forth, are what TVA is calling their IRP scorecards. So TVA received, basically took all of the resource plans that the model output based on scenarios and strategies and rated them really on a scale of 1 to 100 on how they perform against each other. And so you'll see on this scorecard here on the left-hand side, the colorful side, you'll see across that top row in white, those are metrics that are designed to measure the risk and the cost of a particular portfolio strategy moving forward. So PVRR stands for present value of revenue requirements, basically the cost of the plan. Short-term rate impact looks out over the next, I believe it's 7 years, to see how that plan might impact rates. The next two, risk benefit and risk, are measures of how much risk that portfolio strategy would expose TVA to in terms of unforeseen circumstances, changes in the future that we didn't plan for, sudden changes. So for instance, if the model were to choose a combustion turbine, a gas turbine, well, there are certain aspects of the combustion turbine that make it lower risk. One, you can build it relatively quickly in just a few years. It can be turned on and off very quickly, so it has a much more flexibility in how it meets demand. But at the same time, by building a gas turbine to meet future energy load, you are exposing yourself to the risk of what the cost of gas may do. And gas prices have been very volatile over the last several years. So you can see for every resource, there's some aspects that reduce risk and some aspects that increase risk. Another example would be a nuclear plant. Once you get it built, the fuel costs for nuclear are very low, and you can basically just turn it on and let it go, barring any unforeseen circumstances. On the other hand, a nuclear plant may take as much as 10 or more years to build, so there is a risk associated with getting 5 or 6 years down the road, and all of a sudden demand stops growing and you don't need a nuclear plant, or God forbid there's an accident somewhere else in some other part of the country or world that sort of puts a halt on the permitting process for a while, and you may have a significant delay there. So just to reiterate that there are certain aspects of a resource that minimize risk and certain aspects that will increase risk, and that's what these two numbers in those sort of middle two columns there are meant to represent. And then finally, the last row on the left-hand side of the scorecard is the total plan score, which really looks at sort of, well, it's exactly what it sounds like. It's a total plan score. It's sort of an average across the different metrics there. Another thing to note about this is you'll see the way they're color-coded from green to red, and as you might suspect, that is green is better, yellow is sort of middle, going to orange worse, and then red being the worst. But another thing that you want to be aware of when looking at these scorecards, and they're all a scorecard for every strategy is in the draft IRP, is that you want to look at the way it's set up is a score of 100 indicates that that is the best scoring resource for that particular metric, resource portfolio for that particular metric. And then all the other scores are sort of are respective of that 100. So if the top score is a 100 and the second best score is a 98, the second best score will receive a score of a 98. So when you look at, for instance, that top red box under short-term rate impact, 97.48, that number gives you a sense of how close it is to the actual best scoring. So while red may indicate it's one of the worst scoring resource portfolios for that particular scenario for short-term rate impact, because it scored a 97.48, it indicates that while it may have been the worst, it wasn't really that far off from the best scoring. So there wasn't a wide range of differentiation between the top score and the bottom score. When you see scores that range into the 80s or 70s or 60s, then you can get a sense that there was a very big difference between the best ranking portfolio and the worst ranking portfolio. And there on the right, that consumer report style chart there, that is what TVA is terming their strategic metrics, and that goes back to how I was saying TVA had statutory directives. Well, this sort of captures how a particular strategy scores taking into account their strategic directives. So there you see environmental stewardship and economic development, and then TVA is handling technological innovation differently where they'll just sort of provide a narrative, but it won't necessarily be scored. Finally, I've put a red circle around that bottom number, the total ranking metric score, and that's basically a summary score of all the colored boxes there. So it gives you an opportunity to very easily compare one strategy to another over that total ranking score because it gives you an indication of how that strategy performs over all of the possible futures that TVA has plugged into the model. Next slide, please. So going back to that total ranking metric score, and you'll see this if you dig into the draft IRP, you'll see that TVA has scored all six strategies, all five strategies, and based on that ranking metric score, which gives you a good assessment of how that strategy scores in terms of cost and risk, they have eliminated two. They have eliminated strategy A and strategy D. Strategy A being a strategy where they would purchase all of their needed future generation growth on the open markets. As you might guess, that was a pretty risky strategy. And strategy D, which really, it was called a nuclear-focused strategy, and there was some higher levels of nuclear in that strategy, but there were some other aspects that made that strategy really quite a bit more expensive and risky than the other strategies. So based on this ranking metric score, TVA has narrowed the field down to really what they term three strategies. Strategy C, which is really a diversity-focused strategy. Strategy E, which has the highest levels of energy efficiency and renewable energy that they've plugged into the model. And then strategy B, which is the baseline plan. But then, again, if you look at these ranking metric scores, you can see that planning strategy C and planning strategy E both scored significantly higher than planning strategy B. And to some degree, planning strategy B is really in there for comparative purposes. as TVA moves forward and plays with the model a little more, they can get a good, better sense of how the model reacts to little differences in what they're inputting into the model. So for all intents and purposes, I think it's safe to assume that TVA is moving forward really looking at planning strategy C and planning strategy E as your two preferred strategies that they're then going to do additional analysis on and possibly present to the board. And you can see that their ranking metric scores score very close to one another, which indicates to me and to, I think, other people on the stakeholder group that some of these other strategic metrics like environmental, economic development, and technological innovation could play a key role in determining which strategy the TVA board decides to move forward with because they score so similarly when it comes to cost and risk. Next slide, please. So now I wanted to go back and touch again on what was the right side of the IRP scorecard from a couple slides back. And you can see here just putting strategy C and strategy E, strategy C being diversity-focused strategy, strategy E being slightly higher levels of efficiency and renewables. And you can see how they compare to one another in terms of the environmental stewardship and the economic development metrics that TVA has set up. And you can see, based on this, strategy E performs quite a bit better in terms of environmental stewardship, carbon footprint, water and waste, and they score, and you'll see strategy C scores, while they score about the same on the low end of the economic development metrics, you can see that according to TVA, strategy C scores a little bit better than strategy E when it comes to total employment and growth in personal income there at the top. Next slide, please. So now that TVA has done this, and that's a very brief overview of sort of what's in the draft plan, and that should also give you a sense whether if you live outside of the TVA region, all of these considerations are to some degree the same considerations that other utilities use across the country. As I mentioned, cost and risk obviously being the primary ones, but to some degree, utilities are beginning to become more environmentally conscious, more conscious of their impact on regional economies and so forth. So a lot of these considerations are sort of what utilities all over the country are trying to figure out when they go through this integrated resource planning process. So now that TVA has come to this step and they've narrowed it down to a couple strategies, now they're going to run what they're calling sensitivity runs. And this is basically a way for TVA to run the model and test what-if scenarios. So what if there is a technological breakthrough that allows us to achieve higher levels of energy efficiency? Or what if we aggressively pursue energy efficiency even higher than what we've modeled? We can tweak that part of the inputs to the model and let the model run and see how the model responds and what the resulting changes are in terms of cost, risk, environmental performance, economic development. So they're going to, over the next 4 months or so, they're going to be running several sensitivity runs, basically answering questions, what if? What if we can't bring a nuclear unit online until 2025, or various what ifs? And there I've listed a few of the what ifs that TVA is planning to run. At SACE's request, they are now planning to run higher levels of energy efficiency and renewable energy back into those two or three preferred strategies. The gas-only expansion under strategy C, which is the diversity-focused strategy, really I don't think TVA is seriously considering not moving forward on nuclear expansion, but they want to be able to say, what if nuclear was not an option? What would that do to the cost and risk and so forth of strategy C? So that's why they're planning to run a gas-only expansion. Deferral of nuclear expansion from 2018 to 2020 really is going to test how much, really it's going to be looking at how much risk will increase if the TVA board were to defer a decision on Bellefonte or another nuclear reactor so that that nuclear reactor didn't come online in 2018 but was pushed back to 2020. So I think it's a very good question to ask, do we need to make these decisions now? And this, when it comes to nuclear, and this sensitivity run will help to sort of answer that question. And then the last one is alternative levels of fossil layup, again looking at changes in cost and risk associated with possibly laying up higher levels of fossil generation assets or lower levels of fossil generation assets. Next slide, please. So now I want to get into a few of the issues that SACE believes are important in TVA's draft integrated resource plan. As you know, we advocate for clean energy all over the Southeast, and those advocacy efforts really focus on three areas: energy efficiency, which we believe is one of the most abundant and least cost resources out there, renewable energy, and then bringing fossil generation assets offline to minimize our impact on climate change and reduce our emissions of air pollutants and the whole host of benefits that come with reducing our reliance on fossil fuels. So here we're looking at energy efficiency, and I've added that chart at the top really just for reference purposes. That is the same chart that we saw several slides back showing the strategies across the top in blue and then just the energy efficiency and demand response attributes. So you can see really just looking at strategy C and E, that the difference between the energy efficiency levels in those two strategies. In strategy C, that energy efficiency level is about 11,400 annual gigawatt hours of reduction. In strategy E, that energy efficiency level climbs to 14,400 annual gigawatt hour reductions. And one of the issues that SACE feels is important, and one thing that we're really working hard to influence TVA on, is that we believe even that range is a very conservative estimate of what TVA could accomplish with an aggressive approach to energy efficiency. What you're seeing across the country, I mean, you're really seeing utilities now pretty regularly achieving 1% annual demand reductions through energy efficiency programs. TVA's highest proposed level of energy efficiency, that 14,400 annual gigawatt hours by 2020, really only represents about a 0.8% in annual reductions. And about over the whole 10 years there, only about an 8% reduction in what is the baseline projected demand, whereas what you're seeing other utilities accomplish across the country is more akin to 15%. And these aren't even the very high end of national best practices. I think these would be a very reasonable target for TVA to adopt and really ramp up the amount of energy efficiency that they achieve over the next 10 years. Next slide, please. So the question is, you know, why aren't we seeing some of these higher levels of energy efficiency in the IRP? And it really comes down to a couple reasons. One, after going through a lot of the stakeholder review process and really digging into some of TVA's operations, it's apparent that TVA has not conducted the research necessary to really fully understand what could be accomplished with an aggressive approach to energy efficiency. They have done some studies, but as far as we can tell, TVA has not asked the question, what could we achieve if we really made it a priority to go out there and get energy efficiency? And by energy efficiency, I mean cost-effective energy efficiency. I don't think anyone is advocating for people to be going out and achieving and going after energy efficiency that is far more expensive than what it might cost for other resources. But what we're seeing and what we feel very confident is that there is a very large amount of energy efficiency in the valley that could be accomplished for less than what it would cost to build generation to meet that same energy demand. And to some degree, while TVA is beginning to sort of dig around into this, they haven't done really a full analysis of what could we accomplish if we went out there and went after it and prioritized it. Another reason really is that using energy efficiency as a model input, and remember I discussed how model inputs just sort of tell the model what it is that TVA is going to accomplish, constrains the model so that the model is not able to see energy efficiency as a resource on equal footing with, say, a gas turbine or a nuclear plant or solar power or any of the other sort of resources, so that the model isn't really able to pick energy efficiency as a resource when it's trying to figure out how best to meet that gap in between demand and generation that we might see in future years. You know, that's partly a result of TVA's hesitancy to go after energy efficiency. They just have a lot of institutional biases towards supply-side resources, traditional resources. And partly it's just a choice. I mean, as you look across the country, you see utilities, some utilities treating energy efficiency very similar to how TVA treats energy efficiency. You see other utilities that really just put it out there for the model to grab when it thinks it's the best resource available. And when utilities do that, what you find is that the model really chooses pretty high levels of energy efficiency because it's available, it's cheap, and it can be developed very quickly, whereas it might take you 10 years to build a nuclear plant. In a year or two, you could get energy efficiency programs ramped up so that they're achieving pretty high levels in a very short amount of time. Next slide, please. Moving on to what we see as another issue in TVA's handling of renewable energy resources. And really our biggest issue here is that looking at strategy C and E, again, as likely the two preferred strategies, you see about 8,600 to 12,000 annual gigawatt hours by 2020. We really feel confident that that doesn't represent a serious commitment to developing the Valley's renewable energy resources. Just the renewable energy resources that are available in the Valley could be a very significant part of TVA's future generation portfolio, but they simply have not made a commitment to going after these resources. That being said, even when you take out the largest renewable energy package that TVA is offering, 12,000 gigawatt hours, and you break that down, you see that the largest portion of that renewable energy package is actually purchases of wind resources from the Midwest and further out west. And while we support TVA's purchase of wind resources, it's a cost-effective resource, it's obviously a clean resource, it doesn't give the in-valley renewables that are available enough credit. So the largest 12,000 gigawatt-hour renewable package is about 44% purchases of out-of-valley wind resources. There's some hydro modifications in there. Solar, wind, and biomass really make up a very small percentage of that. It's probably all three of them total, about 20% of that 12,000 gigawatt hours. And we are extremely confident, and there's been plenty of research out there documenting that there are significantly larger amounts of renewable energy resources in the Valley that TVA could develop and could develop for relatively cost-effectively. So next slide, please. So again, the issue is why this shortcoming? Why is TVA sort of giving renewable energy the short straw? Part of it is TVA's own cost estimates of what these in-valley renewable energy resources would cost. Some of their cost estimates are based on outdated data. I don't think that they have a real good sense of what the people that are actually on the ground installing solar are paying to get these technologies online. Possibly even a larger problem is the fact that TVA has not given any inputs into the model that tell the model what these renewable energy resources are going to do over the next 10 years. So, for example, we've seen the cost of solar energy come down significantly, I think approaching about 50% over the last several years. And by all accounts, the cost of solar is expected to decline by 25, 30, possibly even another 50% over the next several years. And this is not something that TVA has plugged into the model. So the model isn't really aware that this might happen. Instead, the model is assuming that solar will cost in 10 years what it does today. And it's assuming that for all renewable energy resources, wind, biomass, even to some degree landfill gas and some of the other ones that TVA has control over, like hydro modifications. So in a nutshell, they really haven't fleshed out the analysis of renewable energy resources like they have with other traditional energy resources such as gas, and nuclear, and coal. And that creates a problem because it doesn't allow the model to really see a clear picture of what these resources can provide further down the road. And then finally, and another reason, is TVA is not giving full value to the sort of ancillary benefits that renewable energy provides, including increased grid stability, which would lead to lower costs in terms of transmission and development of the grid, higher levels of job creation in the valley, greater levels of in-valley investments, reduced greenhouse gas emissions, reduced emissions of hazardous air pollutants, all bring benefits to the valley. And TVA isn't really giving full value to those benefits when it's conducting its analysis of resource options. Next slide, please. Finally, we'll go into TVA's proposed fossil asset quote-unquote layups, and that's the bottom row there of the chart I've given you there. And so you can see across the different strategies that TVA is proposing different levels of fossil asset layups from 2,000 megawatts all the way up to 7,000 megawatts. But in the two preferred strategies, strategy C and strategy E, you're looking at about a difference between 3,000 and 5,000 megawatts of fossil asset layups. Really, 3,000 to 5,000 megawatts of layups over the next 7 years, that's by 2017, would put TVA among the national leaders. Our largest issue is really with the use of the term layup. The draft IRP states that the goal of long-term layup is to preserve the asset so that it could be reintegrated into TVA's portfolio in the future if power system conditions warrant it. And that is a concerning statement to us. I mean, we really feel that it's time to move away from fossil fuel generation, and permanent retirement is really the way that is what needs to happen. We really believe TVA needs to make a commitment to bringing these assets offline permanently, partly because preserving an asset over the course of 10 years costs a significant amount of money. So you're already adding costs to – you're already adding to TVA's costs over 10 years by preserving these assets. There obviously are costs associated with retiring these assets as well, especially when you get into environmental cleanup, but not as much as it's going to cost to preserve those assets for possibly bringing online 10, 15 years into the future. And also, it's simply a matter of principle that we need to move away from fossil fuel-based resources. We need to begin addressing climate change. We need to clean the emissions out of the air, and permanent retirement is really the only way to do that. Next slide, please. So again, we get to why this shortcoming in the integrated resource planning process. And basically, it comes down to a few factors. One, TVA has relied on coal-fired generation and fossil fuel-based generation for almost 60 years now. And to some degree, it has done a very good job of keeping the lights on. And so they're very hesitant to give up on that resource, even though we have alternative resources that can keep the lights on just as well and bring a lot of benefits such as cleaner environment, greater economic development, and so forth. So there's an institutional bias there that they're hesitant to really let go of those resources. As I mentioned previously, when we were discussing renewable energy, TVA is not giving full value to the benefits of alternative energy resources, so that's making coal look better than it actually is when you are comparing the resources. So again, that makes them hesitant to let go. And then finally, to some degree, and TVA has not confirmed this, but just from our own internal observations and really an understanding of TVA's thinking, I believe, you know, and it's valid that TVA must maintain some security against the risk of a failed nuclear renaissance. I mean, one accident somewhere in this country could very possibly shut down the nuclear industry for several years as the Nuclear Regulatory Commission adjusts and new regulations come out, and honestly, you just have a public backlash against that. And if that were to happen, I believe TVA is to some degree trying to hedge their bets that they would have a generation resource that they could fall back on. Now, we would argue that they should just simply turn to more aggressive development of energy efficiency and renewable energy, but that's a fight for a future day. Hopefully not, but if it happens, then that's where it will go. Next slide, please. So in summary, TVA's draft IRP is not perfect. Really, the overall process, it was a very positive step forward. SACE is very supportive of the process and is generally supportive of the outcomes, but we do see the issues that are resolved. TVA needs to improve their treatment of efficiency, renewables, and coal plant retirements. But in general, the whole process is a very positive step forward. But most importantly for today, it's not over. And the comment period really provides a fantastic opportunity for people to tell TVA where they think our energy future needs to go. TVA, quite honestly, doesn't ask for our opinion all that often. So I think it's important that we give it when they do. And I believe that TVA is very committed to taking the comments they receive and adjusting what they're doing based on those comments. I do believe that over the last couple of years, TVA has made a turn for the best in terms of really looking at the people that it serves and addressing the concerns of those people. Next slide, please. So how do you make your voice heard? Well, as we discussed, the draft IR Integrated Resource Plan is out there right now for public comment. You can download it from the website shown there, www.tva.gov/IRP. On that same website, you'll also find a link where you can submit comments online, or you'll find an address where you can submit comments via mail. And let me just emphasize that comments can be as simple as you want to make them to as complicated and technical as you want to make them. A simple comment that says, I want you to go out there, I want TVA to go out there and get every ounce of energy efficiency that it can, is effective. A simple comment that were to say, because of the economic benefits that in-valley renewables can provide, the jobs, keeping the money in the valley, and so forth, I want TVA to prioritize developing those resources, is an effective comment that TVA will address and hopefully tweak their resource planning process based on. So I would encourage everybody to submit comments in whatever capacity you have time for or you think is appropriate, and tell TVA that we want more energy efficiency, that we want the renewables in the valley to be developed, and that we need to really start permanently moving away from these aging and outdated coal-fired power plants. And then finally, for more information or additional questions, you can go to our website. You can contact us via our website. I will always be available to respond to any questions that we get on the TVA's resource planning process. And I'll do everything I can to help people understand the process more and submit comments in whatever capacity they think necessary. Next slide, please. So that's my shtick, so to speak. Courtney?
Well, thank you so much, Sam. That was a great presentation. We are actually going to open up for question and answers. On the right-hand side of your screen, you should see a control panel. Three boxes down should be a box that says questions, and those questions will be fielded in the order in which they are received. So the first question is, what is PPAs and ACQs under SC number one?
PPAs stands for Power Purchase Agreement. Basically where TVA would go out on the open market and purchase power when they need it, or would not own the generation resource itself, but would actually somebody else would own the generation resource and that they would buy the electricity from them. So an example of a power purchase agreement is TVA's purchase of wind resources from the Midwest. So there are wind developers who own those wind turbines, and TVA is just buying the electricity that those wind turbines produce. And what was the other acronym you wanted clarification on?
ACQ.
ACQ. To be honest, I'm drawing a blank on ACQ, and I'm not sure what that is. I might be able to look that up. We can move on to the next question, and I will get back to you on that one.
Okay. Next question, Sam, anything from TVA on time of use pricing and start metering?
Not so much in the draft IRP. You will see a little bit of discussion in the draft IRP about the transition to time of use pricing. Basically, as I understand it, TVA has incorporated time of use pricing into the demand forecast. So it is part of the energy efficiency and demand response program, and so it is part of that input energy efficiency EE and DR that TVA is plugging in to adjust the load growth forecast down. But there is not a lot of discussion of exactly where these programs are going, what their future, what their impact is going to look like in terms of a year-by-year changes to TVA's demand or load curves. And I believe, you know, just as a sidebar, the time-of-use pricing is very much in the pilot phase. While they're rolling it out to the distributors, I think that there is going to be a, I don't want to say trial and error, but there's going to be quite a significant learning curve over the next couple of years to understand how these time-of-use pricings are impacting TVA's demand, and probably to tweak the programs a little bit so that they're more in line with what TVA is trying to accomplish here, which is really to reduce that those couple hours of the day when everything is on to try to get people to shift their use of electricity to other times of the day based on, you know, price responses.
Thank you, Sam. Next question. Do the cost of renewables in the model take into account the market for RECs?
The cost of renewables do take into account the cost of RECs. In all of TVA's, well, when TVA purchases renewables, now I don't know for sure. Yes, I believe so. When they purchase renewables in general, whether it's through a power purchase agreement or if they were to develop their own renewables, either way they would retain the REC so that when they're purchasing renewables from people who have solar on or renewable energy from people who have solar on the rooftops or wind developers and so forth, part of that price includes TVA's rights to the renewable energy credits. And for those of you who don't know, renewable energy credits are sort of a separate value to renewable energy based on regulations that may require a certain percentage of renewables and so forth, so that we're not only are you buying the electricity, but you're buying the credit to be able to say we're getting that electricity from a renewable energy resource. It's basically a measure of your reduction in carbon footprint, I guess would say. So there is a separate value associated with those renewable energy credits, completely separate from just the value of the electricity itself. And TVA purchases those renewable energy credits typically when they contract to purchase the electricity from a renewable energy resource.
Wonderful. Next question. And please continue to send your questions in through the question box. The next question is, did TVA put a high enough risk on the risk of waste from burning coal to wit Kingston disaster?
You know, that's a very interesting question, and that is one thing that TVA has been a little bit aloof, I guess would be the right word, vague on, because one of the issues that we sort of raise, and we're just really now starting to dig into it, is where in there was the risk of any sort of really environmental catastrophe, where was that plugged in, and we had a hard time finding it. So whether it would be another Kingston coal ash spill or possibly something having to do with one of their nuclear facilities or any sort of environmental catastrophe that really became a financial burden for TVA, really brought a lot of cost in terms of environmental health, public safety to the valley. We weren't able to really find where those sort of risk of an extreme event was plugged into the model. And it's an important point because for a model that is almost exclusively designed to look at cost and risk, to leave out the risk of something that, as we unfortunately all know too well, can happen, sort of tends to elevate those riskier generation resources make them look a little better than they actually are to the model. So that's something that we're dealing, that we're trying to address with TVA, and as the stakeholder review group meets over the next 4 or 5 months, hopefully we'll be able to get them to reconsider how they're handling the potential risk of an environmental catastrophe. And I'll be happy to follow up, check our website or our blog, and I'll keep you posted on where that goes. But as of right now, the draft IRP does not seem to really take into account that risk to the degree necessary.
Okay, next question. Anything from TVA on incentives or support for efficiency renewables or for the distributors to do so?
I'm sorry, say that one more time.
Is there anything from TVA on incentives or support for efficiency and or renewables or for the distributors to do so?
Well,
is there any incentive?
Right. In terms of incentives and renewables, if you look at that chart of strategies or where I was looking with our issues, those packages of efficiency and renewables are what TVA believes that they can accomplish with a certain level of incentives. Now, what those levels of incentives are a little bit unclear, but for instance, the current Generation Partners Program, what TVA believes they can accomplish with the current Generation Partners Program extended out through 2020 is included in that package of renewables, that 12,000 gigawatt hours under Strategy E. Now, there is very little or no discussion in the draft IRP about what TVA could accomplish with additional incentives or with different programs. And to some degree, that's a glaring error that is really a symptom of a larger issue with TVA having to do with renewables, and that's that they haven't really made a firm commitment to aggressively going after the renewables that are available in the valley. Once they were to make that commitment, then you start talking about, okay, how are we going to get the renewables? And that's where you start to get into the program design. What are the best programs to run? What can these programs go out and get us? And it's similar with energy efficiency. I mean, for people who have been tracking the energy efficiency, TVA's energy efficiency programs, you know, they're just now starting to make a real strong commitment to energy efficiency. So there's a certain level of uncertainty associated with how much they can achieve, partly because they haven't done the research, partly because they're not as comfortable with that resource as they are with some of your more traditional resources. So right now, we believe that they're modeling very low levels of incentives. So in that package for under those strategies of energy efficiency, there are some incentives included in that package. But from what we can tell, those incentives are actually relatively paltry to what you're seeing other utilities offering around the country. And you're not offering higher levels of incentives and just spending money. Even at those higher levels of incentives, that energy efficiency resource is still cheaper than having to build a new a coal plant or a new nuclear plant or one of these sort of generation assets, supply side assets that you would have to build if you didn't get the energy efficiency. So that's another issue that we're struggling with TVA, and that we believe TVA is struggling with themselves on exactly how to value this efficiency resource and exactly what can we get if we were to institute some of these best practices programs that you're seeing across the country.
Okay, thank you, Sam. Next question, and this will be the final call for questions, so if you have any, please submit them now. The next question, has TVA looked at, let's say, for instance, Duke's energy efficiency program?
Well, I know TVA is certainly aware of Duke's energy efficiency program, and this question probably goes back to TVA's August 20th announcement at their board meeting that they were going to be it's a very fine distinction, and I need to go back and check, but I'm not sure if they committed to being the leader in the Southeast when it comes to energy efficiency or a leader in the Southeast when it comes to energy efficiency. But either way, TVA is aware of Duke's new energy efficiency programs, their new energy efficiency target of ramping up to 1% annual energy demand reductions ramping up to that point, I believe, by 2016. And it should be putting pressure on TVA to step up their efficiency efforts as well. If they're going to be, whether it's the leader or a leader, they're going to need to keep up with utilities like Duke Energy, who are now starting to recognize the value of this resource and now starting to figure out how they're going to go out and get it. So it's part, I think TVA is considering it. I don't think it's part of the draft IRP. This document was really completed for the most part before Duke's announcement. But it might play into the revisions that are made between now and when the final IRP is released in spring of 2011.
Thank you, Sam. What was considered in the efficiency improvements in Scenario Plan E?
You mean what was considered with the efficiency programs, with the efficiency improvements?
Mm-hmm.
That 14,400 gigawatt hours by 2020, I believe, really is a little bit ambiguous as exactly what parts make up that 14,400 gigawatt hours. As I've mentioned, TVA has done some internal research on what the potential is in the valley and what might be achievable, but hasn't done the research necessary to say, okay, what exactly can we go out and get with cost-effective efficiency programs? So to some degree, there is a gap there, and I think TVA would admit that if that is the direction that they choose to go in, that they are then going to have to come up with additional programs to go out and get that amount of energy efficiency. Now, also embedded in that are the programs that they're currently running, like the in-home energy evaluation, the online energy right home evaluation, the industrial, commercial, and advice incentive program. So there are some programs that they're running now that are really just starting to come out of the pilot phase that I think TVA is modeling as ramping up pretty significantly over the next couple of years. And then the remainder of that really are programs that have yet to be designed, but that TVA has at least done the research to feel comfortable that they can design programs to go out and get that.
Next question. Why did TVA go ahead with nuclear plans before the IRP was completed?
Well, that's another good question. And I think if you ask TVA, they would say, if you look at some of the preliminary results, and if you dig into the draft IRP, you'll see that I believe the majority of future scenarios call for Bellefonte Unit 1 to be brought online in 2018. And I think TVA would say, if by chance that's the direction we're going to go, if we need that resource in 2018, we need to start developing that resource now, because it takes 8 years. Really, it takes more like 10 years, but they've already got some construction done. So it's going to take them 8 years to complete that nuclear reactor. Now, we have an issue with that, especially given the economic downturn and the reduction in load growth that TVA is seeing. We really don't feel that decision needs to be made now. We really don't know how quickly the economy is going to recover. We really don't know how much energy efficiency TVA can go out and get. TVA hasn't made the effort to go out and really develop the renewable energy resources in the valley. So from our perspective, we're saying, you know, until you've convinced us that you've done everything you can to get all of the cost-effective efficiency, all of the in-valley renewables that you can, we don't see any reason to even talk about nuclear, because there's no proof that you're going to need this resource in 2018, and that you should hold off on this decision until really more information is in and you can convince us that it's necessary, because at this point we're simply not convinced. And TVA hasn't been particularly receptive to that argument, unfortunately. But, you know, the Bellefonte game isn't over either. And while they did commit $250 million in 2011 to doing certain aspects, some of the engineering work, and I believe building some of the support structures that would house workers and so forth, they were very clear, and that was not a final determination on Bellefonte. And we are holding them to that statement, and we expect that discussion again as time goes on, about whether we need to be really dumping money into Bellefonte at this time, when there isn't much to indicate that we're going to need it if we go after some of these other resources like efficiency and renewables.
Okay, this next one is a couple-part question. So the first part is, how successful have customer-side energy efficiency programs been when run through distributor utilities, as are the Right Energy programs?
Right.
Okay.
All right, well, I'll start there. I believe, honestly, it's too early to tell. I mean, as people probably know, TVA has really sort of dropped the ball on energy efficiency over the last 10 years, and I think TVA to some degree would admit that. I mean, during the late 80s and 90s, you heard TVA board members specifically saying in public, you know, we're not in the business of conserving energy, we're in the business of selling electricity. And that was really their mindset for several years. So they really dropped the ball and really fell behind on energy efficiency. Now, over the last couple of years, you've seen them start to invest more, start to bring in some competent staff to help design and administer programs. And so you're seeing these new programs like the in-home energy evaluation and the industrial advice and incentive program really starting just now to come out of the pilot phase and go valley-wide. And so I think it's still a very open-ended question as to what they can achieve, what they will achieve. I think we could say to some degree what they could achieve, but what they will actually go out and achieve is still, I think, very much an open question. Now, in terms of having to run them through the distributors, you know, that is, I don't want to say, well, it is to some degree a hurdle for TVA. Designing a program that works for Memphis Light, Gas and Water, as well as it does for Fort Payne, Alabama, is very difficult. And I think to some degree, TVA's new energy efficiency staff, headed up by Bob Balzar, recognizes this and are now working on a much broader suite of programs that so that distributors with different characteristics can run programs with different characteristics that are well suited to them. That being said, if you go back all the way back to the late 70s, early 80s, TVA was very much a national leader in energy efficiency programs. TVA was running programs through their distributors that were achieving very significant levels of energy efficiency. And really, those programs were cut off in the early to mid-80s, partly as TVA pursued a very aggressive nuclear strategy. But the point being is that it has been demonstrated that programs can be designed and administered by TVA, flow through the distributor, and go out there and successfully and cost-effectively achieve high levels of energy efficiency. At this point, however, I think we're still waiting to see that happen currently.
Thanks, Sam. In that same vein, are there metrics or oversight measures associated with distributor utility run programs?
Not so far. And that is one thing, you know, it's an interesting relationship between TVA and its distributors. Obviously, they have very significant contractual relationships. TVA sells its power to the distributors. But technically, under PURPA, the Public Utility Regulation and Policy Act, I might not be getting that quite right, but under federal law, TVA is considered the regulator of the distributor community, much like you might see a utility commission be the regulator of the utilities in a different state or outside the TVA region. And we have discussed this a little bit with TVA. You know, I believe that relationship kind of swings back and forth. On one hand, TVA needs to keep their distributors happy. The distributors are technically free to leave and buy their power from somebody else other than TVA. Obviously, there are some complications there, but at least the ones on the edges, like Memphis and Chattanooga and so forth, could very conceivably sour on the TVA relationship and go out and contract to buy power from somebody else. So that gives the distributors quite a bit of leverage over what should be their regulator, that is TVA. So I think that has inhibited TVA's ability to sort of impose metrics or mandates on the distributors, because quite honestly, given the relationship between TVA and its distributors, the distributors feel pretty comfortable simply saying no, and TVA doesn't feel particularly comfortable pushing back on that. So that's an issue. It's a complicated issue. We would like to see TVA step up into more of a regulatory role. but we are very aware of the contractual relationships between them. And, you know, it's just one of those things that TVA staff need to learn to deal with. And really it falls to some degree on the public and SACE as well in going out there and making sure the distributors understand that their constituents, the people that they're selling power to, want energy efficiency and renewable energy. If the distributors see that move from the bottom up, see their constituents calling for these resources to be developed, they're going to become much more favorable towards TVA's programs and TVA's push from the top to get those resources developed.
Okay, we have two more questions. The next one is, how wedded to the IRP do you expect TVA board to be, and do they actually sign off on it?
TVA, the board will not, I don't believe, will sign off on the final plan so much as the staff will bring the final plan to the board and say, and go over it, you know, obviously review it with them and dig into it with them and say, based on all of the technical modeling and considerations that we have done, we believe that these are your best one or two strategies for moving forward to meet future energy demand. You know, and it will be really a guiding document for the TVA board. So it will be up to the board to really take the reins, dig into it, understand it, and to allow it to guide their decision-making. I think from my understanding and from our relationships with TVA board members that they're going to be pretty heavily engaged. I think they're very interested to see the outcome. And I think they're very willing to have this document guide their decision-making. I don't think there are a lot of egos on the TVA board when it comes to the IRP process. I think they all recognize that it has some value. The new TVA board members coming in, I think, are going to be even more attentive to the IRP simply because they're going to be climbing such a steep learning curve when it comes to how TVA operates that I believe this document is really going to provide them a big jump start up that learning curve to get them in and to get them knowledgeable pretty quickly. So we're anticipating a very positive response from the TVA board once this final plan is finished.
Wonderful. Last question. Shouldn't we support demand rate changes for non-commercial to show further incentive for energy efficiency in design and installation of renewables that produce power during peak demand times?
Can you say that one more time? I missed the first part.
Shouldn't we support demand rate changes for non-commercial to show further incentive for energy efficiency in design and installation of renewables that produce power during peak demand times?
Yes, and an unequivocal yes. And the time-of-use rates that TVA sort of rolled out in August or is now rolling out will to some degree do that. I mean, right now they're starting with, you know, seasonal time of use rates so that your rates will change depending on the season of the year, and then it will slowly incrementally move towards actual, your rate will change depending on the time of day that you are using energy, and that's going to require some technology upgrades and so forth, but that's the direction that we're moving in. Rates that incentivize energy efficiency and demand response, or rates that incentivize installing renewable energy that produces energy during peak times, sort of goes hand in hand with those time of use rates. What will be important will be making sure that while TVA is charging you rates for the energy that you're using at the most expensive time, that they're also paying you for energy that they're getting from you at the most expensive time. So while we feel that it is appropriate for TVA to charge higher rates during peak times of the day, it's also very appropriate for TVA to be purchasing energy, whether it's energy efficiency or renewable energy, for higher rates if that energy reduces demand during those same peak times. So, and you'll see, or what you see when you look at TVA's energy efficiency program offerings, is that they're very geared towards going out and getting that energy efficiency that occurs during the peak parts of the day. So you will see incentives for instance, appliance replacements or energy efficiency appliances for those appliances that have an impact or that are operating during the peak times of the day, and probably less incentives for those appliances that operate, you know, sort of consistently throughout the day. So I think TVA is aware of it. The question will be whether or not the programs are designed to be equally fair in terms of what they're charging and then what they're paying to deal with that peak demand issue.
Thank you so much, Sam. This has been a great presentation, and I appreciate all of your thoughtful questions. Please visit our website later today or tomorrow for the audio and presentation of today's webinar. It will be in our webinar archive section. Please also visit our website for more information on how you can get involved with this topic and to attend future webinars. Thank you very much, and I hope everyone has a great afternoon. Have a great day.
Yes, thank you, everyone, for your time.